Welcome to STRAT, Strategic Risk Assessment Talk. And today I'm going to talk about something I've kind of alluded to in the past, but it's just one of those things that doesn't quite go away. And there's a lot of things that have been happening. I'm going to talk about Russia, what Russia's been doing, talk a little bit about our relationship with Russia, but also talk about what's happening with Russia, the war in Ukraine, U.S. position, and what's going on in Europe. And to say that we're living in interesting times, to quote the Chinese curse, would be to put it lightly. So let me kind of talk about what has happened. First off, you may have heard that there are Russian drones that had flown into Polish airspace, and some of them had hit in Poland. They were explosive. One case, they blew off the top of a farmhouse. They hit a field, caused some damage, and the Poles shot down about 3 drones in total so far, maybe more. And Russia says, oh, this was not an accident. We didn't mean to do that. But generally throughout NATO, certainly including Poland, they don't see this as some sort of incidental thing. They see this as some very provocative move by Russia that they're flying these drones in. And some of the drones were admittedly decoy drones, drones meant to basically draw away the Ukrainian air defense capability. So that's true. But nonetheless, these drones are flying into Polish airspace, which is NATO airspace. And they are flying in and hitting the sovereign soil of Poland, which is a NATO country. And so this is a big deal. At the same time, we've been seeing more drone incursions down in Romania, which is another area. Same thing. Russia says, oh, these are accidental if they say anything, or they just deny it even happened. Again, the Romanians are feeling that this is probably far more intentional than Russia wants to let on. Everybody's trying to maintain a certain amount of diplomatic space in this regard, but it does appear that this is happening. Of course, some of it could say is just a sheer volume of drones that Russia's sending over, that you're going to have a few that sneak out of Ukrainian airspace and cross the border. And Poland, I should point out that Romania and Poland both border Ukraine. That's not, so if you're saying why just these two countries, well, the reason is because these two countries happen to border Ukraine. So that would be why you'd see drones or combat weaponry that could possibly go over their space. All right. So that's something that's happening. It's obvious that Russia is using these drones to intimidate NATO, and they're trying to make a statement to NATO. I always feel that when they do these things, it always backfires on them. They think it's going to intimidate them. And usually what happens is it just makes people or make the NATO countries more resolved to build up their defenses, put more money into their defenses, and basically make them more resistant to whatever Russia is saying. So it continues to backfire over and over again for the Kremlin, for Putin, but he keeps playing that same song over and over again, thinking, you know, what's the definition of insanity? Doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results. Well, that's kind of what Putin keeps doing. He does the same thing with Ukraine. He hits them hard with Ukraine, hits them with all his drones. He somehow thinks that's going to break their will to fight or will to resist Russia. It does the exact opposite. It hardens their resolve to defeat Russia and not to accept Russia as an occupying power. So I just always wonder a bit what's traveling between Putin's ears. He's not a dumb guy, but he does some really dumb things. And this is definitely amongst the dumb things. Very provocative. Nothing happened. Now, I've spent a little time in Estonia, spent some time in the Baltic states. And one thing, geographically speaking, in case anyone doesn't know, the waterway that connects the Baltic with St. Petersburg, that basically is the port, if you will, in that area that where goods go in and out of the Baltic for Russia, that goes right by Estonia. Now, that's been problematic because they have seen where fiber optic cables, pipelines, other things have been what appears to have been deliberately cut, damaged by vessels going up and down that little corridor there. And in some cases, in one case, Finland actually took a ship and held that ship because they were very sure, and Denmark did the same thing. And so anyway, that's also, they have Kaliningrad, which is that little piece of Russia that's disconnected from the rest of Russia that sits between Poland and Lithuania, completely disconnected. Kind of a geographic anachronism going back to World War II. And then you have obviously anything going up and down that strait out of Russia up there. Well, 3 MiG-31 jets that are capable of firing hypersonic ballistic missiles from air launched Russian. I'm not saying these did, but I'm saying they are capable of that. Anyway, three of them flew out of international airspace into Estonian airspace and basically hung out there for about 12 minutes until they were chased out of the sky by F-5s that were sent to protect Estonian airspace. That is very provocative. And frankly, there is no way that those pilots didn't know where they were flying. It's just not possible that that's the case. So whatever Russia says, this is another violation. And this has been at least the third major Russian violation in their airspace in as many days that just keeps happening over and over again. And I should mention that Poland actually shot down, I think I did mention it, three drones before. So these are very provocative actions by Russia. Both Poland and Estonia have invoked Article 4 of the NATO treaty. Now, Article 4 is not like Article 5. Article 5, sometimes called the Three Musketeers thing, you know, one for all and all for one, says that we all engage in mutual defense. Article 5. Article 4 says that we engage in serious consultations because we feel there's been a violation of the sovereign territory of a NATO country. And that's where they are right now. They have invoked Article 5. And it's being used. I should mention with this that a new initiative called Eastern Sentry has been implemented to bolster NATO's eastern air defense. Also, the European Defense Commissioner has discussed plans to create what he calls a drone wall, a wall against drones across NATO's eastern border region. So all of this stuff is happening with trying to stop Russia from these constant incursions into what is essentially the sovereign territory of NATO countries, but specifically the airspace, air defense zone of various countries. Now, with this, very frustratingly, the U.S., and I don't know why, I'm sure they're just saying, well, it's budget cuts and we're reallocating resources over to the Pacific or whatever, which those are certainly good. Those are reasons that they have pulled back on security assistance programs in Europe. Europe definitely has gotten the message that the U.S. is pulling back from Europe, that the U.S. is reorienting to the Pacific, that it's not going to have as much resources, as much of a footprint, that they're, you know, eventually we're going to pull forces out of Europe as well. And so Europe is really getting ready to stand alone. They're trying to do this as quickly as they can, but that it's a big haul for them. And honestly, Europe has been underinvesting its defense for so long. It's a bigger load for them to carry because they just they're not at the starting point where they should be. So now they're having to invest a lot. Of course, the other side of that is when you're buying a bunch of new stuff, when you're done, you're going to have a bunch of new stuff, which is opposed to having a bunch of older stuff. So there is a silver lining on that in that they will have some modern weaponry technology capabilities that will put them much further ahead than if they had a lot of infrastructure, a lot of assets already in place. So Europe's trying to catch up in that regard. As such now, Russia is very aggressive in violating airspace and violating sovereignty of NATO countries. It's also been pursuing consistently over the last couple, 3 years, a hybrid warfare campaign. I believe Lithuania just made a determination that some of the big attacks, arson attacks in Lithuania were clearly, from 2024, were clearly tied to Russian hybrid warfare techniques, sabotage, if you will. And they've been doing a bunch of other things. You know, I talked about the cutting of the pipelines, the cables underwater, but there's been a number of other types of things, to include assassination, that have occurred over in Europe, and it's all tied to Russia. So that's another part of what's going on there with Russia's very over-aggressive sort of program of trying to intimidate Europe and trying to intimidate NATO. The big question on all this is this something where they're trying to show off their strength and confidence or their ability to do stuff? Or is this really something that's based on fear and doubt within their own capabilities? And I'm going to tell you, looking at the whole thing, I think they're doing this stuff because they're actually afraid. I think Putin is actually, you know, despite all his bluster, I think he has a tough time in the world of truth telling. He has a tough time telling himself the truth of what's going on. But with the war in Ukraine, this thing has gone completely the other way. In fact, the head of MI6, the outgoing head of MI6, just gave a speech, basically says, look, Russia's losing the war, period. They're not going to win. There's no way they're ever going to win. And the only, you know, it's only Russia that seems to believe that. Every once in a while, you hear the White House say something that They seem to buy in on this Russian narrative that they're winning the war. They're not. They're vastly losing the war. All right. This last week, Putin put out there that he's considering reasonable measures to start taxing the rich, increasing the levies, if you will, the dividends on raising tax rates on luxury goods. He's going after the oligarchs. And he's already gone after a lot of oligarchs. So these are the remaining oligarchs. And he's saying, hey, look, I'm going to go after these unbelievable fortunes that you guys have acquired under my tutelage. That's kind of what got him into power. That's what's kept him into power is that he has always catered to the interests of the oligarchs. Now he's going after them. We'll see what that turns into. But he cited, you know, the United States during the Vietnam War, Korean War, did exactly what we did, raising taxes and stuff like that. And he said they're going after high incomes. Well, part of it is because he has burned his bridges with people with low incomes. They're tired of paying for this war. For the folks that are outside these major urban areas, the rural areas, they're tired of paying for this war with blood. It's their sons that have been dying on the battlefield in droves more than the urban elites from St. Petersburg or Moscow, where, you know, that's kind of what Putin sees as base. And you can only do that for so long. I know they always talk about, well, you know, Russia has this vast reserve of people, not as big as a lot of people think. All right. It's probably somewhere between 165, 170 million total population. And within that, they have this decreasing birth rate. Within that age group that's below 18, you have a much smaller than your past baseline normal of how many young men of, you know, capable of military service would be in that age group. And as soon as they hit 18, they're drafting them, sending them over there and putting them in that meat grinder. So when you talk about losing a million, you know, 1.1 million troops or whatever, that has had a disproportionate impact on a certain age group of military age males, I should say, in Russia. And that's a country that does not have a high birth rate. It has a very low birth rate. This is very different than it was, say, 50 years ago. So this is really costing them. The other thing, too, is they've been drawing down their sovereign wealth fund. I think it was like $140 billion before the war in Ukraine. It's now sitting, you know, something around, you know, 25 to 35 billion, maybe 36 billion, maybe at the outside. But it's, you know, I think $36 billion is where it was sitting. And so that's a huge decrease. That's less than a third, getting close to a fourth of what it was before. And it's drawing down very quickly. And that's actually, when you look at the total numbers of dollars, that's not a lot of money when you look at how much it costs them to maintain this war effort across the board. The European Union has announced a fresh batch of sanctions against Russia. It's going to make it more difficult for them to fund the war. They're going after their energy trade. Now, I think this is mostly because the Trump administration doesn't really want to impose crippling sanctions on China, not the least of which is the impact that would have on the U.S. economy if all those Chinese goods suddenly jumped up immensely in price. That would have an inflationary effect on the economy. That would stop any progress with the Federal Reserve Board cutting rates. In fact, they may have to actually increase rates. And that would have a dramatic impact on slowing the economy right now, particularly the problems we're having with labor statistics. So I don't think he's really hot on doing that. So he kind of flipped the script and he said, hey, Europe, you need to quit importing Russian gas and oil. And that's legit. You know, that was one of the things that Putin had going for him, was that Russia, that Europe had allowed itself to become very dependent on Russian gas and oil. Ironically, while they're doing all this other stuff to support Ukraine, they're still buying Russian gas and oil, which props up the Russian gas and oil prices. They've been trying to move away from that, but Putin knows that that is a Russian, the whole, so to speak, although they're buying a lot less of it now. They used to be their main market. Now their main market has switched over to China and India, but that is something that Trump has put out there. He has kind of put that forward to say, hey, look, you know, you've got to stop doing this. And that puts a lot of onus on the Europeans, because I don't think they can come together to wean themselves off quickly of Russian gas and oil. Now, the Russian economy is actually flatlined. It's been decreasing in size. And I don't believe the statistics that come out of Russia, because it's so tough to get accurate statistics. If their own economic indicators are showing their economy is decreasing at all, then you should assume that they're decreasing a lot more than what they're showing, right? In the last couple of months, their currency has lost about 10 to 12% of its value. And basically, they got zero annual growth, and it looks like it's probably in negative numbers. Sharp fall of the economy, sharp fall in ruble, really sharp fall in the price of oil, which is what they're dependent on to pay for the war, is exporting oil. And this horrendously increased number of casualties because of this floundering summer offensive the Russians kicked off, this big offensive where they've taken very little territory. But in exchange for that, they have lost horrendous amounts of personnel and anything else they have, what little armor they're using on the battlefield anymore. They have just been taking huge hits in that regard. So they have what's essentially been, at this point, a failed summer offensive. This is the big summer offensive that they thought they were going to gain a lot of territory. They didn't. They're building up a force of about 150,000, if you will, to try and do a big fall offensive. That thing may fall on its face as well. And basically, they've got a lot of problems. They've got poorly trained, poorly led troops. They have an ineffective military strategy. The Russian military has really struggled to try and advance on the battlefield. And it's far slower than even their historical offensives. In fact, it's slower than what they were doing in World War I by some counts. So it's really, really, really bad. And the ratio of Russian losses to Ukrainian losses may be 5 to 1. So for every 5 soldiers, Russian soldiers killed, maybe 1 Ukrainian soldier's killed. Now, keep in mind, you say, well, yeah, but Russia's 3 times bigger than Ukraine. Well, you don't have to do the math. You go, you're starting to run out of Russians at some point. And even with the ratio, it's different. The Ukrainians are in the defense. The Russians are trying to be in an offense, which means the Russians are going to keep losing troops at a greater rate. So that's going to be a problem for them. Now, Putin has no interest while he's doing this fall offensive of a ceasefire or peace agreement. It sounds like Trump understands that. I don't know if that's fully incorporated into all the thinking because I look at actions, not just words across that. But he seems to have kind of, he said, look, you know, he doesn't seem to have any interest in these. You know, he says he's very frustrated with Putin across the board. However, one thing about this fall offensive, it could, you know, I mean, there's always a possibility it could be effective and they could gain some territory. On the other hand, they could go out there, do what they have been doing, and this thing could really fail. And I know if you say, well, if they lose 100,000 troops, that, you know, does that really matter compared to 1.2 compared to 1.1? Does that really matter? If you look at it that way, you'd say, well, it's marginally more, but it's not a big deal. The thing is, there are certainly Ukrainian leaders that are looking at this military who are saying, look, this may be their last big attempt. This does kind of look a lot like the Germans in the Battle of the Bulge in World War II. They threw this huge force against the Americans. And if you looked at it initially, you'd say, well, they should be able to push back the Americans because they have this heavily armored force and they're going up against these lightly armored or unarmored, if you will, airborne forces that have moved way forward. And what happened was the Americans held the lines. Patton was able to shift across the battlefield, of course, push them back and destroy them. But with that said, the Germans just were not effective. And once that big army that he had sent to fight the U.S. in the Battle of the Bulge, once that had been stopped, the Germans were never able to ever manifest a big offensive for the rest of the war. They didn't just fall apart, but they were never able to do anything even close to that after the war. And I'm kind of looking at this, wondering if that's kind of what would happen. And unless, you know, it's less about the battlefield, maybe more about the second, third order effects politically for Putin and Russia. If he does this big battle and they fail famously, that could make some things happen. You could end up having a 1917 or maybe a 1991 moment there, where all of a sudden the Russian people are saying, look, we've lost confidence in the government. We've got to change. This is not going to work. And that could be a big switch, right? Don't know if it's going to happen, but I'm just saying that would be a huge shift if it did. Anyway, we'll see how this goes. Right now, it looks like they're going to send a bunch of Russians into the typical meat grinder sort of tactics that they've been using before, and they're going to lose a lot of poorly led, poorly trained Russian troops. But we'll see how it goes. You know, at some point, mass does matter, even if they're poorly led, poorly trained. If they throw enough forces at them, you know, you can't start running out of ammunition, if anything else. So anyway, What this means is potentially big. We're going to watch, but this fall could be, you know, we could be seeing something into September, into October, which could be very decisive for how this war is going to go on. And if there is a change in regime in Russia, that could be a huge shift geopolitically. That could open up opportunities as well. If they were to withdraw from Ukraine, if they were to pull their forces back from challenging NATO, if there could be some sort of agreement reached, I see beyond that, Russia, which should shift big, this could be an opportunity to do what we failed to do in the early 90s, which was to reinforce a Russian government that was not opposed to the West. And maybe we could do something along those lines. Although I don't see anybody coming in taking over right away from Putin that is anything less than kind of like Putin. So we'll see what happens. Anyway, could be a lot of big things. Anyway, thanks for listening to Strap. Please go to strappodcast.com. Go to my YouTube channel. I just posted something on it, a News Nation hit. I just posted that. And that's Hal Kemper TV. Forgot to mention that. So anyway, thank you and stay listening and appreciate your time.